Welcome to the Northeast Christian Podcast. We're so excited that you've decided to check out our weekly messages. We hope that you're challenged and inspired by what you're hearing today. We'd love to have you join us this weekend at one of our campuses or online at northeast.live. For more information on Northeast, visit us at necchurch.org. If you love the Northeast Podcast, subscribe to our channel and leave us a comment or a rating in the Apple Podcast Store.
Now, before I get started with my message today, I wanted to take a moment to introduce myself. I know there are many of you who I haven't had the opportunity yet to meet face to face. So my name is Adrian Feldman, and I am the online campus pastor here at Northeast. You know, I live and breathe this online church thing that we've been doing for the last couple of months, and it has been my absolute privilege to invite you all into the online campus for the last little while. I live and breathe online ministry, and I have loved sharing it with you. I've been here at Northeast for about 6 years with my really, really cool family. Take a look at them. I love these guys so much. And we showed up at Northeast when my youngest was a newborn, and we have been here ever since. It was something about Northeast that just won us over, and I'm not really sure what it is, except that we were so lost when we showed up here on the doorstep at Northeast. And the people of Northeast threw their arms around us and welcomed us in and helped us feel like we belonged. First, a question. Have you ever lost something? Have you ever had to go looking for something? I don't mean like something small, like when you walk in through your front door and you think you hung your keys on the hook right inside the door, but you actually left them on the kitchen counter. I mean, have you really, really lost something? One time, I got home from work and I set my keys on the arm of the couch right inside my apartment. And I went about the rest of my evening and everything was fine. But the next morning, when it was time to leave for work, I went to get my keys and they were gone. So I looked for them for a few minutes and I couldn't find them anywhere. When I realized I was going to be late for work, I called my boss and I said, "Hey, I'm running a little bit late. I can't find my keys. I'll be there as soon as I can." Well, after an hour of searching relentlessly for my keys, I had to ask my roommate to take me to work because they had vanished. After work, I called a friend to pick me up and bring me back home. And day after day after day, I searched on and under and around and behind every single thing in my apartment trying to find those keys. I even emptied the refrigerator to see if maybe I had them in my hand when I put away some groceries, and they were not there. A few days into this, I called the Kia dealership and I said, "Hey, is there any way you guys can make me a new key? I have completely lost this key and it's nowhere to be found." And they said, "Yes, thank goodness I bought my car from the dealership." And I went and they made the new key and I took it back to my car and it didn't fit. As luck would have it, the code that was in their documentation at the dealership had a typo in it, and there was no way to make a new key for my car. And I was devastated. I had to rely on other people all day, every day, to take me to work, to bring me home, to let me in and out of my apartment. It was a disaster. Well, about a week into all of this, one of my friends came over to the apartment and he brushed right past me and through the front door. And he said, "I have an idea." And I'm like, "Okay, you have lost your mind." And he picked up the couch and he tipped it up above his head and I heard a jingle. And I'm thinking, you gotta be kidding me. My car keys were inside the couch. They had made their way down the arm of the couch and through a hole in the lining of the couch. They were in the base of the couch. I had to cut it open in order to get my keys out. And you know what the worst thing about losing my keys was? It had nothing to do with these tiny pieces of metal that had gone missing. It wasn't that I lost these pieces of metal. It was that I lost my freedom. I lost my autonomy. I no longer had the ability to come and go as I pleased. I had to rely on my roommates and my friends and my neighbors for everything I did, and it was awful. You get that, don't you? We're Americans. This is what we do. We believe in freedom. And here in America, we define freedom as the ability to do what we want, whenever we want to do it, no matter what. That is freedom. And we believe in freedom, and we love freedom, and we fight for freedom. Now, before we go any further, I want to make sure that you hear me clearly. I'm talking about personal freedom. Now, of course, we know that there are groups of people in our society who are fighting for daily freedoms, and that's important. Freedom is something that God has given us that gives us the ability to make choices and gives us the ability to love each other. But today, I'm talking about personal freedom, the kind of freedom that we fight for, the kind of freedom that we spend all of our days working to achieve. Here in America, we believe that we have these kinds of freedoms and they are supposed to be given to us. We believe that we have the freedom of association, the freedom to gather with other people, to belong to whatever group of people we want to belong to. We believe that we have the freedom of belief, to worship however we want to and whoever we want to, wherever and whenever we want to, even during a pandemic. We believe that we have the freedom of speech, to say whatever we want, whenever we want to say it, no matter whose feelings it hurts. We believe that we have the freedom of privacy, even though we checked that box on our phone that lets it follow us everywhere we go. Even though we don't really experience that privacy, we still believe we should fight for it. We believe in the freedom of information. We believe we should be allowed to know everything all the time and to be right about it. We believe in the freedom of mobility. We should be able to go wherever we want, whenever we want to go. And we believe in the freedom that comes with wealth. We believe that we should be able to work hard and to earn a good paycheck for doing that. Now again, please hear me. I'm not saying that everybody perfectly has all these freedoms all the time, but I am saying that we live in a culture that decides that we should have these freedoms all the time, and we work for them, don't we? I mean, think about it. Why else are you working 50, 60 hours a week to get that paycheck? Why are you checking your emails before you go to bed and first thing in the morning before you get up? We believe in that relentless pursuit of freedom, and that's what we fight for in our culture. You know, Luke chapter 15 tells us this story about a guy who does exactly that, who fights and claws and works for personal freedom. He's this guy we call the prodigal son. Now, in Christian circles, we have come to define the word prodigal as meaning wayward. And it is this idea that the prodigal son is one who has just drifted away from all that he's ever known. Here's how the story goes. Luke chapter 15, this is what it says. A man had two sons. The younger son told his father, "I want my share of your estate now, before you die." So his father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. A few days later, his younger son packed all of his belongings and moved to a distant land, and there he wasted all his money in wild living. Now, in today's society, this story maybe doesn't make quite as much sense as we'd like it to. So let me paint the picture for you in more modern terms. Let's say there's a man who has two sons, and he also owns three businesses. And he's already written up his will, and it says that when he dies, he's going to give the first two businesses to his older son and the third business to his younger son. Well, one day his younger son comes up to him and he says, "Okay, Dad, here's what I want you to do. As if you are dead, I want you to settle your will right now. Sell off that third business and give me the cash right now. I want it. I want it right now." And for some crazy reason, his father does it. And he sells off the business and he gives his son the money. And you guys, I think the prodigal son gets kind of a bad rap in this story. I mean, yes, I agree that it is a little bit out of left field that he'd be like, "Man, Dad, you're dead to me. I want my inheritance now." It's not very nice. It's definitely disrespectful. And there's nothing that's wise about going and blowing all of his money. But maybe he was just looking for his freedom. See, here's what we don't talk about in church circles. That word prodigal, it doesn't mean wayward. It means recklessly extravagant. And recklessly extravagant is exactly what this son was. You know, it's like he took all the money from the sale of that store and he went to Vegas and he blew it all. You guys, he was looking for freedom. He was looking for his own personal freedom and he found it. In fact, I bet it was kind of fun at first. He was free. He wasn't connected to his family anymore. He didn't have to worry about all those pesky entanglements that make all of these rules for his life. He was looking for freedom. And when it says he wasted all of his money in wild living, we're talking he blew it. It's like he's in Vegas and he goes and he does it all. Casinos and prostitutes and baby tigers. Did you know you can buy a baby tiger for $2,000? Imagine, right? He blew it all. And I bet it was kind of fun at first. I think we do this in our own lives. I think we chase after personal freedoms. Now, I'm not saying that we go out and we tell our dads that they're dead to us and we go and blow all of our money in Vegas. I think sometimes our pursuit of personal freedom looks like sacrificing time with our families in order to take the climb up the corporate ladder. Sometimes the search for personal freedom looks like avoiding that difficult conversation with your spouse because you just don't want to have it. Sometimes the search for personal freedom looks like not calling your grandma because you don't want her to guilt trip you into visiting. But you know what? When we do that, we turn up empty every single time. You see, all that time that we sacrifice with our family so we could climb the corporate ladder, we miss out on watching our kids grow up. Every time we avoid that argument with our spouse because we just don't want to have it, we end up free from the conversation, but we miss out on that opportunity to let our spouse know that we love them more than this argument. When we avoid that conversation with grandma because we just don't want to hear the guilt trip, we don't have to have the guilt trip. But what if she dies before you get the chance to go visit her? I mean, you were free, but you ended up with nothing. You know, once I had a conversation with a friend of mine who had just landed a job that had an incredible paycheck. This paycheck was double what he was making at his previous job, and he was over the moon about the cash. But when we talked about it, he said, "I just don't understand. I have more money than I thought I would ever have. I can live wherever I want. I can vacation whenever I want to. I can explore all of the restaurants this incredible city has to offer, but I still feel empty. I don't get it. Why do I still feel so empty?" That's what the pursuit of personal freedom gives you. Nothing. You know, some of you went off to college with this idea that you could finally do everything you ever wanted to do. You know how I know? I did it. Now, I was a pretty straight-laced kid, and so what I did was kind of ridiculous. But I went off to college, and I got it in my head that I could finally do whatever I wanted to do. So I did. I had ice cream for dinner every single night. And I slept in every day until 12 or 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I skipped my classes. I stayed out all hours of the night. And I went shopping whenever I wanted to. I was free. And it was awesome. Until it wasn't. Because you know where it left me? 60 pounds heavier. And really, really sick. I was in and out of doctor's offices all the time. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. I was fighting debilitating depression. I started out not getting out of bed because I didn't want to. In the end, I couldn't get out of bed at all. I was in physical pain. I was in emotional pain. And I was out of cash. I couldn't even get home. You see, I had all the freedom I ever wanted. And yet, I had nothing. But this is exactly what happened to the prodigal son. I mean, here's what happens next. This is Luke chapter 15, verses 14 through 16. About the time his money ran out, a great famine swept over the land and he began to starve. He persuaded a local farmer to hire him, and the man sent him into his field to feed the pigs. The young man became so hungry that even the pods he was feeding the kids looked good to him, but no one gave him anything. The son in the story is very literally starving. Now, in today's society, most of us are not literally starving. I know most of you live in the east end of Louisville. This is one of the wealthiest zip codes in the state. I know that we're not literally starving. But you know what starving looks like? Starving looks like drinking until you pass out every single night so you can just turn it off. Starving looks like binge eating so you don't have to feel anything. You know how I said I was eating ice cream for dinner every day when I was in college? I would eat a pint of ice cream every single night. It was brownie batter from Ben and Jerry's, and it was delicious. Not delicious enough to eat every night, but delicious. And when I was having a really bad day, my boyfriend would bring me a quart of ice cream, and I would eat it, bite after bite after bite, because maybe the next bite would numb the pain. But it didn't. You know what starving looks like? Starving looks like a long string of non-committed relationships. One night stand after another. Maybe for you, starving looks like scrolling your phone for hours so that you don't have to spend any time alone with your thoughts. And besides, your kids think you're working. Maybe starving looks like waking up every morning thinking, there's got to be more than this. For some of you, this might be like just a little nagging corner of your brain where you realize you're doing that, you're numbing out day after day. Maybe it's this little thing that you need to fix. But I think some of you are at rock bottom and you are starving. And you are desperate, and you gotta find some sustenance. That's what the son in the story was doing. He was looking for sustenance. He went and got the job where he thought that he might be able to eat some of the food that the pigs were eating, only the guy who hired him was looking over his shoulder, and he couldn't even steal a bite of the pig's food. He lost everything, and he knew he was going to have to find sustenance. You guys, the relentless pursuit of personal freedom will lead you to starve. And someday, you're going to have to go looking for sustenance. You know what the son does? He comes up with a plan. And I know how this goes because I've done it too. He realizes, I've gone too far. And I know that my dad's never going to want to call me son again. I know that that relationship is probably damaged beyond repair. But I also know my dad's a good guy. And I know that he pays his servants enough that they get to eat. They've got more food than they could possibly eat. So here's what his plan looks like. When he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, at home, even the hired servants have food enough to spare. Here I am dying of hunger. I will go home to my father and say, Father, I've sinned against both heaven and you. I am no longer worthy of being called your son. Please take me on as a hired servant. I've been there. And I think you have too. That moment when you realize, I think I got to come up with a way to get out of this situation. And I might never be able to return to where I was before. But maybe if I work and work and work and work, I can get something better than where I am now. So he goes home. And this is the most beautiful part of the story. So he returned home to his father. And while he was still a long way off, his father saw him coming. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son. He embraced him and he kissed him. Now, you guys, all along, this son, he went out in search of personal freedom. And when personal freedom led him to starve, he went out in search of sustenance. You know what he didn't know? All along, while he was looking for these things to fill him up, the father was looking for him. Guys, I don't think there is anything more beautiful than the point in this story when the father comes running. He doesn't wait for his son to grovel. He doesn't wait for his son to list off the laundry list of horrible things he's done wrong. The father comes running and he throws his arms around his baby boy and he says, "I love you." And maybe you need to hear that today. That no matter where you've gone, no matter how far you've fallen, there is a father in heaven who is looking down the road for you, who's waiting for you to come home, to throw his arms around you. And when this happens in the story, the son lets out this heart-wrenching confession. "Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you. I am no longer worthy of being called your son." And you know what his father does? He calls out the servants and he says, "Go get a robe and a ring and some sandals and put them on my son. We're gonna have a party." Now in this culture, the robe and the ring and the sandals, they all would have been indications that this was his honored, beloved son. Make no mistake about it. The father wasn't saying, "Once you've paid your dues, I'm gonna let you come back." His father was saying, "You are always my son. I love you, and I am so glad you're home." Do you remember how I said that the word prodigal meant recklessly extravagant? We attribute that name, that title, to the son in this story because what he does when he goes off to that distant land is reckless and extravagant. But you know what we don't usually talk about? How recklessly extravagant the father's love is for his son. We don't talk about how he could have just said no to his son when he came home. But he didn't. He called him son. Now you, if you're lost today, if you have wandered way too far, won't you come home? He's waiting for you. Our Father in heaven, he's looking down the road, and all you have to do is come home. You know how I know? It happened to me. I told you before, I've only been at Northeast for 6 years. When I got here, I was lost. I had spent my entire life chasing down some idea of perfection, chasing down this idea that if I worked and worked and worked and worked, maybe the world would recognize me and love me. And so day after day, after agonizing day, I tried to work to get the approval and love of the world. And I was empty. I had nothing. Well, one day, I found myself driving down the road. It was Breckenridge Lane here in Louisville. And I started praying in the car. I said, "God, I am so lost. I need you. Please help me." And for the first time in my entire life, I felt loved. Because I was his daughter. Because he knew me and he wanted me and he loved me. And that's what I need you to hear today. You have a Father in heaven who knows you and loves you and wants to call you his child. No matter how far you've gone, will you come home? That's all you have to do. Just come home. Maybe coming home for you today is going to look like coming back to church. Maybe for you, coming home means taking that step for baptism. You know, here at Northeast, we like to make sure we say, baptism is not a finish line. You don't have to have it all together. You don't have to hatch a plan like the prodigal son did to work your way up into the good graces of the family. You don't have to do that. You just got to say, yes, I'm ready, God, to take that step. Baptism is a starting point. So if you want to come home and you're ready to take that step in baptism, we want to make it really, really easy for you. Right now, pull out your phone, text Jesus is Why to 31996. When you do that, a pastor's going to connect with you this week so that we can walk with you, so that we can celebrate with you because you made that decision to come home. You have a Father who loves you, who is looking down that road, just waiting for you to come home. Will you please come home?